Now broadcasting the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show, positioning your business with strategies for an extraordinary future. Dr. Nilda features expert guests from diverse backgrounds to bring you their stories and strategies that have helped them reach their success. The diversity in industries gives you that panoramic view from an array of industries. They are innovators, thought leaders, trendsetters, and strategists. Here, Dr. Nilda reveals strategies that will position you to be on the cutting edge and be able to do what you love with the people you like, making the profits you want to live the lifestyle that you have dreamed of. And now, here's your host, Dr. Nilda Perez.
Hello, welcome back to the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show. And with me today is my co-host, Rachel Calderon.
And, hi, everyone.
And Jeremy Sisson. So let me give you a little bit of his background. Jeremy Sisson is the CEO and broker of the record for Evan James & Associates. He is an award-winning full-service commercial real estate brokerage headquartered in Orlando, Florida. They specialize in investment sales, landlord and tenant representation, debt resourcing, and property management. Okay, Mr. Sisson has been in the mortgage and real estate industries for the last 16 years, where he has been a party to thousands of transactions. He started as a multifamily specialist at the nationwide powerhouse commercial real estate investment brokerage, Marcus & Millichap. He is now a power broker. He negotiates and closes deals in every major niche, product type, and commercial real estate industry. Welcome, Mr. Sisson.
It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so we're going to jump right in. You have a bachelor's and a master's in business, and yet you chose to become a real estate broker or to get into the real estate. What attracted you to real estate?
I think initially it was a position that was offered to me when I first came into the work world when I got my bachelor's in business administration and marketing many years ago. I'm a big fan of always working with different types of clients and focusing on customer service. And working in the mortgage industry is where I started, provided me and afforded me the opportunity to make a decent amount of money to provide for my family. So that's kind of how I got started. The MBA was a different thing that came about 15 years later. As a CEO of multiple brokerages and holding companies, it made good sense to get my master's in business administration from UCF so we could continue growing the operation. Actually, our dean of the graduate school asked why I didn't get my master's in real estate. And I said, well, I've already been doing this 15 years. I really want the MBA to kind of help expand the business and grow it. So
right. You were like, I think I should be teaching it rather than taking
right.
getting my master's in
it. It would have been very boring to get a master's in real estate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely a class that you could have taught with 15 years experience.
If someone is interested, Jeremy, in selling their commercial property or real estate, why should they call you versus another brokerage? And what makes you different from that, from the rest?
Right.
Actually, that's a really good question. And I'm sure most would agree that there is an overall slowness to how fast commercial real estate deals are done and the communication in general. I would say that the answer is located in our main differentiator from other brokerages, which is sublime customer service. So while all brokerages provide a level of customer service that most clients would categorize as satisfactory, we routinely go above and beyond the call of duty. And so to answer the phone on the first ring, where it doesn't go to voicemail. We send emails right away and respond. We set up tours for clients within 24 hours of the request. And we give our clients the good, bad, and ugly, that 360 point of view on each deal, so they see the full perspective. And some of the responses that we've routinely gotten from our clients are, I didn't expect a call or an email in several days, or wow, that was fast, or it's nice to know there's someone who responds in a timely manner. So I would say that was the reason why we get chosen pretty routinely, even over bigger brokerages.
So wow. Customer service for you guys is top of the line because of your response time.
Absolutely.
In the commercial industry, I'm guessing, mm-hmm. because is it different than regular real estate?
People say that we respond in the way a residential real estate agent would respond. they're very quick on the draw. Right. And that's not normal in commercial real estate. As a matter of fact, when we're co-brokering deals with other brokerages, we have to wait for responses for a week at a time because it's maybe they're listing and we have a buyer, for example. So we try to act as if we're on the residential side, and that has done us very well over the years.
Got it. Okay, that's great. That is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Right. Fantastic. So here's my question, Jeremy. I know a lot of people who do flipping, mm-hmm. they do house flipping. They do a lot of single family homes. Can mm-hmm. you tell me when an investor has the money, why would they choose commercial property over, you know, single family homes that they can flip? What is the difference? What's good, the good, the bad, and the ugly, pretty much?
So typically people that we work with, a lot of them started in residential investing. They buy a house, they get a return, and then they're hungry for a duplex or a quadplex, or maybe they want that 10 unit apartment complex. So there's definitely an evolution in terms of investing, people who invest in residential real estate, and almost all of them inevitably go into commercial real estate in some capacity. And I think one of the main reasons why is it's a more sophisticated transaction. You can cash flow a lot more money on commercial real estate deals versus residential. And if you think about it from a risk perspective, if you lose a tenant on a rental property, now you're out 100% of your income, right?
Right.
On a 50 unit apartment complex, if 7 units are unoccupied, you're still covering your debt service, covering your expenses, and probably still being profitable if 43 of them are occupied. So there's less risk based on the larger properties that you can purchase. So I would say that's the reason why people move, and why it's probably better to invest in commercial real estate, because ultimately most people who are doing residential end up doing commercial anyway, investing.
Okay. And now you see that as a running trend, because I'll be honest, the people that I know that do the house flipping or mm-hmm. that have invested in single family homes continue to, actually, I know several people that have several single family homes.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you convince them that commercial, you know, real estate is a better investment, a better return, a better on the ROI?
I guess it depends on how much money you want to spend and invest. And so if you're buying residential homes, and it goes back to the downturn, if there was a downturn in the cycle, commercial real estate traditionally is less affected by a downturn in any market, in any cycle, rather than residential. They're the first to get hit. So if you lose half of your tenants, you're going to be in a bad position. Also, the appreciation on commercial real estate assets is a lot less than it is in residential.
Okay.
Fantastic. Okay. Now, I noticed that you work closely with professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And also you do residential real estate, you know, real estate. Why do you do both? Because I did notice that you received the NBA. You got NFL? Awarded NFL.
Yeah.
Was it NFL?
Yeah, I'm on the NFL Alumni Association Board of Directors for the Central right. Florida chapter.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Not many real estate brokerages work closely with athletes.
Right.
And why? How come yours does?
Well, we actually work with both professional athletes and residential real estate agents. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, most commercial real estate brokerages don't do that. And the answer is yes, we actually work with both. We feel residential agents should have the opportunity to break into the commercial real estate industry without having to forego their residential bread and butter. And so as a brokerage, we've actually created a CRE, a commercial real estate mentoring program, where for a percentage of each deal and an hourly rate for mentoring, we can actually assist any residential agent to break into and flourish in a specific product niche or a geographic area. Now, in regards to working closely with the professional athletes, like you said, I sit on the NFL Alumni Association Central Florida Chapter right. Board of Directors, and I'm their volunteer community relations director. So I see firsthand the financial shape that some players come out of their career with, which is more often than not, virtually no money savings or investment. So that's why we created as a brokerage our CRE Professional Athlete Program, where we work closely with high net worth professional athletes and entertainers their CPAs, their accountants, their talent agencies, attorneys, financial advisors, to provide sound and expert commercial real estate investment strategies for the athlete and their families. So what we do is we focus on creating a portfolio of commercial real estate investment assets for each pro client and their families that will provide a means of stability of, provide a stable means of income production long after that profession, their professional athletic and entertainment careers have ended. So that's kind of why we do it, because we want to put them in a better position to where they're making $25,000, $50,000 a month, even if they're not playing in the league anymore.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Right. So tell me, what advice would you give someone who is investing in CRE?
Okay. So I think the first thing I would probably tell them is to interview several commercial real estate brokerages and agents to represent them. I would probably also tell them to talk with specialists in all product types and niches before investing in a particular one. And then probably the last thing that I would tell them is to have several people who understand the financials and the nuts and bolts of each deal that they're looking to invest in and what constitutes a good buy before they actually pull the trigger. And so once you have that team of experts in place, then I would say happy in investing.
Okay. So what I see, Jeremy, is that there's a lot of financial planning also with the commercial real estate. So it's not just going in, buying a property, and that's it. But you seem to be very well-rounded in caring for the entire portfolio, how that person is doing. Mm-hmm. So there's somewhat of financial planning. Is that accurate? Or,
well, we don't do the financial planning piece. Most clients have financial planners and accountants that they consult with. As anyone who buys commercial real estate knows, there are tax write-offs for owning properties. So when you have it's a way to mitigate your tax liability when you own property, whether it's residential or commercial or otherwise. And so these high net worth individuals just take advantage of the IRS tax code that already exists. And we help them do that.
So when they come to you or, you know, again, is it only people who are high worth net? Does this apply to anybody? You will work along with them and their financial planner to make sure that they get the right property and that they, is that?
Yeah. No, we'll work with anybody. We have clients in all walks of life. We have attorneys who make a great deal of money. We have athlete clients. We've got groups, a lot of operators, tier two operators in commercial real estate, who that's all they do is buy properties. We work with them all day long. So we'll work with anybody who either has the money and wants to learn, right, or they're already investing and they want to buy more. So we work with a wide range of clients.
Jeremy, if someone wanted to refinance their debt service, how can you help them that is ballooning?
So most people don't realize that certain commercial real estate brokerages have the option to help them secure debt on a new purchase transaction or even help them refinance their current debt load if they say have a 5, a 7, or a 10-year balloon coming due, which is what you were talking about.
Right.
And so at our brokerage, one of our four core competencies and business practices is, for a fee, we will source the debt and equity for our commercial real estate clients. So the other three core competencies that we focus on are the representation of buyers and sellers and the acquisition and disposition of their real estate investment assets, obviously tenant and landlord representation and advisory services, and then commercial real estate management, property management. So one of the four just goes back to helping people source their debt. Because at the end of the day, you can go to your local bank, but what if your local bank says no? We, through the years, we've developed hundreds of relationships with private lenders, credit unions, regional banks, national banks, insurance companies. And so you'd be surprised at how many quotes we can pull together for a client if they need some.
Okay, great. Wow. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I'm a futurist, as you well know. Mm-hmm. I would like to know, where do you see the future of commercial real estate?
Mm-hmm.
As you know, when there's such a volatile, you know, everything, there's so uncertain, there's always changes. Mm-hmm. Where do you see it? Do you study the future of commercial real estate?
Actually, there's a lot of different ways that we could cut the information, but I actually pulled out four predictions for the commercial real estate industry over the next 10 to 50 years.
Fabulous.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through all four of those.
Yes.
If that works for you.
Absolutely.
So first, I wanted to start by saying, obviously, thank you for having me. And then next, I want to lead by saying that the predictions I'm about to talk about will have an impact over the next 10 to 50 years in our industry. Some may come sooner than others, but all of these are just predictions. The current state of the commercial real estate industry is typically driven locally and regionally. So each market will be a little bit different, of course. However, all the overall health of our industry nationwide from the 30,000 foot macro level is very strong, despite rise in interest rates, the perceived overheating of some property values, and the tightening of lender guidelines. So across product types and niches, vacancies are down and occupancy is up, rents are up, cap rates are compressed for owners in the marketplace looking to sell. There's more capital available than there are deals to invest in. And we actually get calls all the time from investors both locally and coast to coast looking for cherry deals around the state of Florida and the Southeast United States. And when I say all the time, I mean all the time. We get those calls constantly. So my advice to an investor like that is to have a decent sized group of commercial real estate brokerages and agents that you can trust in every major market who will feed you local deals as they come available. Everyone wants the off market, 70% off retail deal, price deal. That's the ideal location with no hair on the deal and has tremendous upside to it. It's like finding the holy grail.
Right.
Like my mentor used to say, they want to buy at a C-class price point in an A-class location, which is very hard to find, but they do come available. So one of the easiest ways to gain access to those types of deals is to have a long-term solid relationship with brokers like myself who see these deals come across their desk on a regular basis. The last recommendation is if you are offered a cherry deal and you pass on it, don't expect to be the first call the next time it comes available. So be flexible and ready to make a move if a deal is offered to you. So with that said, that was kind of the snapshot of the industry in general. The four predictions, the first one that I see happening in our brokerages is retail will continue to be disrupted by major players like Amazon, and overall tenant mix and base of tenants may radically change over the next 25 to 50 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, and that's pretty big. So I'm gonna give you some statistics and some information.
I love it.
To back that up, okay?
Yep.
There was actually a recent article by CMO.com that talked about how Amazon has already disrupted the retail market. And they focused on five points. And they were supply chain management and distribution. So obviously they have that two-day shipping that everyone knows, and they have local fulfillment centers. A better customer experience. Everyone knows that they have one-click checkout and lower price iniquities just by being in the market. That was number two. Number three is increased efficiencies by offering larger selection with more price points that sway people toward that online rather than the offline purchase.
Exactly.
Right? Number four is the data and personalization, which is their competitive advantage, a better selection and product evaluation through comparison shopping. They do a lot of suggestions, ratings, and sales data. And the last one that they said is killer product search. Amazon has become the Google of product search.
Yes, it has. Oh my gosh.
55%. And would you guys be two of the 55% who basically start with Amazon first? Do you guys start with Amazon?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Every time.
That's my first search.
That's right.
That's my first search engine when it comes to products.
Right. Yeah, that's the go-to. That's the go-to. Yeah, you wouldn't. Yeah, that's because, as you said, they have so many different, you know, at different price points, the same product.
Mm-hmm.
So it beats having to go through the entire internet.
Right.
Everything is in, you know, it's housed, it's one-stop shopping.
So how that affects us in the commercial real estate world is they're building these fulfillment centers, right? They're building 2.3 million square foot fulfillment center, literally right here in Orlando, near our international airport. And so it's going to affect Christmas season for quarter four of this year. It's going to be done in quarter three. They bought Whole Foods for $13.7 billion, and their eyeing target. So they're positioning themselves with a tremendous amount of brick and mortar around the country. And some of these changes that they've already made in Whole Foods alone are they've cut prices, they're selling Amazon Tech in their grocery stores, and they're switching to Amazon Prime as the Whole Foods new rewards program. So what's going to happen is any type of retail who has to compete with this online shopping juggernaut will be affected. Retail strip centers and shopping center landscapes will change with the type of tenant mixes that we're not used to seeing. And perhaps even the grocery anchored shopping centers may change dramatically as well.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. I love these predictions. This is all stuff that I've been studying, that I've been researching, and you're absolutely on point. Love it.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm sure you'd be willing and interested to know from an investor perspective, which retail businesses are least likely to be affected by Amazon's presence. So I'm going to go
through. Absolutely.
People who invest are like, tell me more about
that. That's right.
All right. Yes. So here's the ones from a commercial real estate perspective, more than likely will not be affected by Amazon's presence. They will be local restaurants, DIY, which is do-it-yourself stores like Lowe's and Home Depot, automotive chains like AutoZone, O'Reilly, and Advance Auto Parts, right. Retail pharmacy outlets like CVS and Walgreens, discount dollar stores like Dollar General, Dollar Tree, and Dollarama, and discount retailers like Zara, TJ Maxx, Ollie's, Sephora, DD Discounts, and Big Lots not only will survive, but they may continue to grow and prosper, even with Amazon in the marketplace. It's kind of crazy, right?
Right. And why?
I'm glad you... So the reason why, yes. And that's the most important thing, right? That these types of retail will be less affected by an online shopping presence is they're more likely to have an immediate need or want attached to them rather than a delayed one. For example, Dr. Nilda, if your spark plug goes out on your car, you're less likely to wait 2 days for Amazon to send it to you, right?
That's too long.
It is. Because you need your car the same day. So the same goes for local restaurants and the fact that shoppers really like hunting and finding bargain deals. These are the businesses that just, they're kind of Amazon proof, if you will, because there's an immediate want or need. You don't say, hey, let's go to a restaurant tonight down on Mills Ave, and you're not going to wait for, you know, it has nothing to do with Amazon.
Right.
That retail stays strong.
Exactly. I think a good portion of that also is like that customer relation. Mm-hmm. That, you know, a restaurant would have versus, you know, Amazon sending you a box of, you know, is it called apron or chef apron? I don't even know. I mean, they would send it to you and ship it to you, but it's a different experience than you would receive it, you know, instantly. You go there, you sit down, and they cater to you. Amazon, unfortunately, can't do that.
No, because it's about the experience, exactly how you said. And it's so amazing because I just had a conversation with a friend of mine who was telling me, I hate online shopping. I was like, really? I love online shopping. She goes, no, I need to look. I need to touch. I need to try on. She says, I can't wait 2 days to get a package and then try it on and it doesn't fit and I have to send it back. She goes, you see, they just ruined my day. They just ruined the whole experience.
Right.
So I can see how stores like Zara and TJ Maxx and these stores are going to stay because there are people that need that, you know, again, they need that kind of service. They need to speak to somebody. They need they need to touch and feel what they're going to purchase. For those people, I totally get it.
You're absolutely right. And that's the reason why. It literally comes down to common sense. But if you think about it, people don't use common sense all the time.
Well, they say that sense is not all that common.
Yeah. So from a commercial real estate investment perspective, I would say certain types of retail are strong, but Amazon will be a disruptor in the marketplace. So the second one that'll be a trend for commercial real estate is there will be a great need for more low-income reliable housing as more families are at or near the poverty line. So there was a study let me see how it goes. So most REITs choose to build A-class apartment complexes near tight primary core markets. And that leaves some very strong openings to build mid-quality or at least mid-quality apartment complexes in less affluent areas. So the case in point, we recently put out an ad, our brokerage put out an ad for units in a property that we manage for our client. There were over 500 inquiries because the rental price points were reasonable for the common person. There was a recent report by Freddie Mac that said that the number of affordable housing for very low-income families across the U.S. actually dropped 60% between 2010 and 2016. And they said that there is a rapidly diminishing supply of affordable housing, with rent growth outstripping income growth in most major areas. So they actually introduced a small balance loan program that targets smaller multifamily buildings that most people have trouble securing private financing on. So that initiative may help stem the decline of the supply of affordable housing. One of the reasons why this is happening is there's a lack of government subsidies that are available right. for C-class yes. apartment complexes, right? Everybody's exactly. heard about the Section 8 before.
Right.
Well, that's been changing or decreasing over the years. So there's actually less money in building a complex like this due to the lower return for investors. So without federal assistance, rural counties would lose 40% of their housing stock that's affordable to residents who live in or around poverty, and urban areas would lose 50% of their stock. And so since there's a huge demand for this type of product, and I know because our brokerage get those calls on properties that we manage, my guess and prediction is that the market will find a way to fill this gap over the next 50 years. While it's not the sexiest investment in the world, someone will find a way to fill this huge demand for lower income housing.
I actually hope so, because you know what, to be honest with you here, we're here in Atlanta and there is a huge population of homeless, not because they don't have a job.
Right.
But they're totally displaced in these hotels that are charging them so much money. As a matter of fact, they're probably paying more by staying at a hotel at those extended stays.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And some of them can't even afford that. And they actually are in a tent right here in my town, which is horrible. And I think it's terrible because no one has made it easy enough for them. And again, they're working class citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just that they cannot afford the rent. Yeah. So I hope that really, you know, goes across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I love that. Now, Jeremy, I know that you have a third and fourth, but here's my thought. Well, we're at the top of the hour. And what I would like to do is I would like to invite you back to share the third and fourth prediction so that we can delve a little deeper on that, spend a little more time on that. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's fine. I'd love to come back. This is the tip of the iceberg.
Fantastic. I love this. I love it. So let's look, we look forward to a third, you know, to a follow-up interview. And in the meantime, let's stay in touch. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much. I know you're a really, really busy man. And thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us and to be on our show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. All right. So this ends this segment of the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show. We want to thank you guys for staying tuned and being here with us. We look forward to next week, where we have another foresight strategist, another futurist who will come and give you more information. And of course, we look forward to having Jeremy back. All right, guys, we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Foresight Strategy Show. You can hear host Dr. Nilda, co-host Rachel with featured guests every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook Live or anytime on demand. Visit www.drnildaperez.com/show. For more information, sign up to our Foresight Strategies Insider newsletter, a $10 value for free, at www.drnildaperez.com/newsletter.